Graham, thank you for that. I must say, for myself, who doesn't know a great deal about this, I've been better informed, and I'm sure that everybody's very grateful for what you've presented. I just ask these questions. First of all, I thought the issue about pricing was as much as anything about cherry-picking, and you didn't actually address the question of cherry-picking. And I mean this in terms of access between... I think you know what I mean. The second thing is, my understanding is that, and I might be very wrong, is that Optus has strung a fibre optic line all over the place around the cities. They've hung the wire around. I think it goes past my house. I don't understand why they don't connect it. And if they don't connect it, what does it say about the pricing relationship between Telstra, you and Optus? If they've strung it up, they're not using it. What does it mean? And thirdly, you're quite right about content. Content is king. And when I look at people like Tiger Woods, you know, that's what we watch when we watch golf. If that's the case, why is it that the AFL has a cartel-like cap on salaries of the star performers in the football game?
Okay, well, I'm pleased you asked the last one, Hugh, because I've got a stock standard answer there, because, as you can imagine, it's not the first time it's been asked. Look, cherry-picking, I understand that. That's a question that's been raised in a few times. Just to put it in its context, it's suggested that that Telstra's competitors will cherry-pick, if you like, the high-density areas of the population and put aside those that live in rural and remote Australia. It's one of the reasons, Hugh, why we have been fairly firm in our approach to the pricing of access to the Telstra network, in particular the copper network, which has been the subject of discussion for some time. Look, for those that have been following the subject, they'll understand what the issue of averaging and de-averaging is. Just in very quick form, let me explain that the pricing strategy that the ACCC has adopted as part of its model price terms and conditions, and indeed has been adopted by Telstra for many years, is one that says that in the highest density population areas, that is the central business districts, access to that copper wire network should be at a much lower price than, for example, in rural remote Australia, where it should be at a much higher price, reflecting the appropriate costs of the networks in each of those areas. Now, why do we do that? Well, imagine what would happen if you actually artificially lowered the price in rural and remote Australia and artificially inflated the price in the high-density populated areas of urban Australia. In rural and remote Australia, you'd be saying to those that might be looking at some form of new technology network, well, guys, you're going to have to compete on an artificially lowered price, substantially lower than the real costs, than Telstra currently offers access. And that in itself would artificially discourage and distort the prospect of competition in those rural and remote areas. So that, you know, if, for example, and I'm just pulling figures out of the air, so those from the media don't quote me on these figures, but if, for example, the real costs of access in rural and remote Australia were, say, $100 per line per month, and Telstra to say, we're only going to charge $30 for that, then anyone that would have the ability to develop new technology that may be more suitable to rural and remote Australia at, say, $50, would say, I haven't got a chance, because at $50, they can't compete with a $30 artificially lowered price. In more high-density populated urban areas, you have, of course, the converse, and that is if you charge too high a price, it then squeezes competition out from competitors to say, there's no way at that high price that we can actually compete with Telstra at the retail end. So that's the process of anti-cherry picking that we endeavour to engage in as part of our price pricing model. You talk about the Optus cable. In fact, it's not fibre. It's a hybrid cable. It's a bit like the coaxial cable we have from Foxtel, and it is strung out of out in a few streets in some cities, but not all cities. It's not the cable that is used for telecommunications. It's used actually for Optus Net, as I understand, Hugh, or Foxtel. Telstra has suggested, although not publicly, it's come in a couple of newspaper articles, that they might well use that Foxtel cable as the means of developing a broadband internet offering other than using fibre optics. But it does have its limitations. For those of you that are familiar with the Telstra current offering, they've only just recently provided for a new what they call cable extreme, which is 17 megabits a second, and it has some limitations on its ability to offer high speeds, not the least of which is that the more people you have using that cable in the street, the lower your speeds become. It's called the contention ratio or the congestion factor, and I think that's the reason that area is not pushed. AFL, look, and I'll give you a serious answer and then I'll finish off with a light-hearted response. The AFL has structured a number of what are known as, what are sort of often suggested somewhat jokingly as anti-competitive practices like salary caps and drafts and the like. Why do they do it? Very good reason. They want to provide for an unpredictable competitive competition. Why do they want that? Because if it's predictable, then it becomes boring. And if it's boring, then it won't attract customers away from the other thing that's called football. I think it's soccer, I think it's something that's talked of recently. But soccer and rugby league, et cetera, et cetera. So the high idea is that they're competing in a marketplace for eyeballs, if you like, spectators, in a very competitive marketplace with other competitions. They are creating an entertainment spectacle, and the way they do that is by providing some evening up of the competition. Why do it? Well, as we all know in business, where you have a completely free market, then it's the endeavour of every individual operator, every business in a market, to knock out the competitors. Because every competitor, every participant in a sector of business would love to be a monopolist, would love to actually operate on their own and have no competitors. And so in the context of the AFL, if you imagine a total free market between football clubs, then you'd imagine that every football club would actually love to knock out of existence every other football club. And as often used to say, I doubt that even John Elliott would like to see Carlton play with itself.
Graham, Jeff Floyd, I was interested in your figure. I think you said $4 billion to roll out a fibre network. From a private sector point of view, this is a fairly significant investment. Obviously, it comes into your remit in terms of a competition environment. From a government perspective, it's a pretty small amount. I think about 99% of the roads in this country are still a monopoly-provided government infrastructure. And it begs the question, I think, is, and I realise this is outside the brief of the ACCC, but if we took this off your agenda and said that the community will roll out $4 billion worth of a network, how would that change the competition dynamics? Pardon me. And in that context, I'd be keen to hear a little bit more about the regional equity issues.
Right. Well, let me say, first of all, that the $4 billion is only stage one because, of course, Telstra's already indicated that that would only cover the first five major capital cities. And then there's a whole range of, obviously, other capital cities plus regional areas plus moving out further and further into to try and cover the whole of Australia, keeping in mind that fibre is probably only relevant to more densely populated areas. Once you get into the less densely populated areas, we've got to look at other options, and Minister Koonin, I think, has indicated that she's currently awaiting expressions of interest and tenders from other parties that might be interested in looking at those other opportunities. But you ask, well, why doesn't government do it? Well, I guess you might ask, why doesn't government do everything? Why doesn't government just build everything that we own? And, we go back to, as I said, Chairman Mayo would say to him, that's not the way we operate in this country. Where it's possible for the private sector to fund something on reasonable terms and conditions, that is, reasonable to them in terms of providing a reasonable rate of return to the investors, and then in the context of monopoly infrastructure such as this, a reasonable access terms to competitors, then we leave it to the private sector. Now, what we've got to do in these areas, of which there are few and far between, I might say, we're talking essentially in the areas of gas, electricity, transmission pipelines, transmission lines and the like. What we tend to do is to say there's got to be a point at which the interests of shareholders, investors and the interests of the public converge. That's what we're attempting to do with Telstra. We may be attempting to do it with the so-called G8, with the other group of eight. What we do is we save government money, our taxpayers' money, to provide for the subsidies that we know as part of fundamental social policy in this country are required for uneconomic investment. That is, for example, investment in telecommunication services in rural and remote Australia, where it's not economically viable to provide residents in those areas with the same level of service as we get in urban Australia at the same price. In terms of equity issues, I take it that's the sort of thing you're talking about. That is, yeah. And basically what government says is this: it is a fundamental social policy that in telecommunications we provide for what is called retail parity pricing. That is, the same price and to the best extent possible, the same quality of service being available to those who live in rural and remote Australia as is offered to those that live in urban Australia. Our role is to try and determine, you know, how that's achieved. It's government's role then to ensure that the universal service obligation is applied, and that can be done by a number of means, either straight out of government budgets or alternatively by some form of a cross-subsidy that operates where we in the city pay for a fair and equitable access for those that live in the bush. That's the social policy of this country, and long may it live.